coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, it's your host, April Wolf, and I'm filling in for your boy, Ricky Carmona. This is Who Shot Ya? And this is you'll find out. This is a special episode, aside from, you know, my having to host. Joining me in the studio today, I've got the wonderful D-Unit Drea Clark.
Yes, April coming in with almost rhymes, definitely beats. I love it. I'm here for it.
Something. Also, trying so hard.
Hearing you say, your boy, instead of like, ya boy, is... It's like, if I could tattoo that moment, I would. Yeah. That was good stuff.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm white. I don't want to own another person's. Yeah, so, Drea, I'm curious, what's good?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. So what's good for me right now is Shrill. And not just the TV series, because I love it so much, and I watched it in... I'm going to say it took me under 20 minutes to watch all 6 episodes somehow, because they flew by. But I've also, and it was joyful and emotional and fun. Like, I had such a good time viewing it. But I've also really loved, there's a lot of things culturally that happen that the think pieces that follow, I'm like, bleh, get out of my face. I have read with a trill of excitement every single piece about Trill. And a lot of it's from New Voices. And it's also made me revisit. I had read Lindy West's memoir Shrill initially, but one of the things that the TV show reminded me of, the 4th episode, the pool party one, is written by Samantha Irby, who's one of my favorite writers, who I discovered back in the day. She has an incredible blog called Bitches Gotta Eat, which I highly recommend. And then based on a lot of her writing from that, she also has, I think, a few books at this point, but she has one called Meaty. She has 2 books. She has a book called Meaty that I love so much. And if you responded to Shrill, check out Samantha Irby. Definitely check out Shrill. I
love
it so much.
That is a great episode, by the way.
Oh, my God. I laughed. I cried. I literally was moved beyond my ears.
Yeah.
Like,
binged the shit out of that
so
myself.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. So there's another person breathing into the mic over here.
Yes.
We have joining us today author and Reading Glasses host, Mallory O'Meara.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here for this all-female episode of Who Shot Ya?
That's it. I know. I mean, it's just, it's very slim and spare, but I think that we're going to bring the energy. We're going to make up for the guys being out. And I just want to know.
Yeah. Feminism won. We're here. We've taken over.
We're going to have an estrofest.
Hell yeah.
Mallory, what's good with you?
Well, I have to steal it because Shrill was also going to be my answer. I just finished watching it because I'm on book tour right now and I didn't get to watch it the day it came out, but I'm a huge Lindy West fan. I love Shrill so much. The memoir. I'm also a huge Samantha Irby fan, and I saw on her Instagram that she had written the pool party episode, and I also laughed. I also cried. It's one of those amazingly written shows where there's like some one lines that just like hit you right to their core, where she was talking about her mom making her eat Special K. My mom did that to me when I was a kid, and I was just like, oh, my insides. Oh, God. It's so, I mean, Samantha Irby, I think her other memoir collection, We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. If you liked Shrill, absolutely listen to it on audio, which is amazing because it's really, really funny. It's just like having a great conversation with your friend. So if you are, you've read all the think pieces, you've watched Shrill twice because it does take like 5 minutes to watch. Mm-hmm. I wanted the episodes to be twice as long, I will say.
As many of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like, that also runs the risk of them just getting shitty after a while, which I don't want to think, but like, hey, smaller is sometimes better. That's why
fair.
I love British TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their portrayal of her garbage boyfriend is just chef's kiss.
Yeah.
My boyfriend literally turned to me and was like, haven't you dated that guy? And I was like, oh, yeah, we all have.
Mm-hmm.
We've all been there.
Luka Jones kills that one. Oh, my God, April, what's good? Oh, see, that's not even on Mallory. I'm the one that knows the rules.
Yeah.
There was a pause.
The co-sat.
Girl,
April
what's
is
good
so
with
sad
you?
Right
I got
now.
To be Ricky today.
See, to be fair, we've used to leave Ricky hanging, too.
Oh. All the time. So what's good with me is Blood Lake.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think it's very different from what you guys are talking about. It is...
Is there also a Fat Babe pool party? A Bloody Lake pool party?
The Fat Babe pool party is right next to Blood Lake.
Sure, no, okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Same neighborhood.
Yeah,
definitely. Essentially, it's a movie that was it's being put out on DVD by AGFA, which is A-G-F-A, the American Genre Film Archive, which I love everything that they're doing. They find out, like, search out these weird, weird movies, you know, just all kinds of genre films, and they save them and they preserve them and they make them widely available. And these are the movies that are not going to be put in any kind of canon of film, you know, but they're still important in ways because they're sometimes like the backyard filmmaking, you know, like what was everyone else trying to do at home? And were they trying to emulate things? Were they trying to be groundbreakers themselves? And Blood Lake is a movie that is like made by a bunch of people who went on vacation and made a horror film called Blood Lake around like a cottage on a lake. And it is so home movie-ish. And they have this guy who goes by the name Voyager, who wrote and produced and performed all of these new, like these 1980s metal songs for it. And the metal songs are so awesome. I'm just like, just want like a soundtrack. And he also does like these like piano sonatas.
Oh, I have to watch this.
So weird. And it is one of those things where you just see like a group of friends who got together and tried their best. But it's also, I have to say, a really amazing catalog of the worst of toxic masculinity. It's so interesting just to see it.
Hold on. A heavy metal filled movie has toxic masculinity
what?
In it? Crazy.
What?
I've never heard of anything like that.
But yeah, Blood Lake, and check out AGFA and all the stuff that they do for genre movies that you've never heard of.
I love it.
So tonight we've got a great show with the three of us. Yay!
We're the estrogen tornado tonight.
No, yeah. Yes, yes.
We're going to be talking about A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night today. An old one, but we're going to revisit it. We're going to talk about monsters because we'll be discussing Mallory's new book, The Lady from the Black Lagoon. And we also got a call from the Who Shot line to answer. And then we'll end with staff picks. So I think we should do It a Dick, right?
Please, yes.
Okay, so It a Dick. This is our news segment where...
I don't giggle when you say it.
I know.
Well, it's actually perfectly appropriate for this first segment.
No, like, yo, It a Dick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think you mean the first thing we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's
yeah,
very
yeah,
appropriate.
Yeah. It's basically, is this important? Do you care? So we're going to read some of these things and ask that question. Is this important? Do you care? The first news segment or news bit that we have is the CEO of Warner Brothers Entertainment, Kevin Tsujihara, resigned this past week in the midst of a sex scandal. The allegations against him are that he used his position to advance the career of actress Charlotte Kirk, who he was allegedly in a sexual relationship with. He was apparently responsible for getting her parts in Ocean's 8 and How to Be Single. So, ladies, is this important and do you care?
Do you guys remember when this first broke? Like, not him resigning, but when this story first came out, I honestly, and there was like a whole expose on it. It was one of those, was getting a lot of like traction, and I read it, and I don't know if it's because I'm so, what's the word, numb inside, that I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't all rich, powerful men do this? Like, the fact that I was almost, like, I care, and I do think it's important, but I was almost touched. I was like, oh, is everyone else caring now?
Yeah.
Because I assume this is happening all the time.
Yeah.
And
yep.
The fact that this has become a media talking point is pretty interesting to me.
That point, I think, is great. But I think, honestly, this would be a bigger news story if it was like, CEO of big film company is a nice guy.
Right.
Like, I'd be like, wow, what? Breaking news. At this point, again, I just assume that things are going to be garbage up at the high levels of so many studios. So I really feel that we've all gotten this sort of news numbness where you're like, oh, yep, garbage people, garbage people, garbage people.
Yeah.
So it's hard to sort of wake yourself up and like really read this stuff and absorb it.
I think the weird disappointing thing for me was the kind of discourse around this where people were like, oh, that's terrible. And I was just like, no, he's going to leave. He's going to have to be forced out. People were like, well, he didn't rape her. And I'm like, is that our fucking
what a
bar?
Great, yeah. Let's all just leap over this bar that's literally on the fucking floor.
You're supposed to, yeah, like it's, shimmy it's under that bar.
Bad.
Yeah.
That person
well,
should
he didn't
not
leave
be
her
running
in a
your
dumpster.
Company.
Yeah.
What a nice man.
Did you not hear she was in both Ocean's 8 and How to Be Single? I definitely looked up her age when this first came out, and in doing so also discovered that she was introduced to him via her Friendship with Brett Ratner. And I was like, girl, you cannot be a 20-year-old actress with a friendship with Brett Ratner. You sleep in a red flag. Like, that's your life now. Like, that's all you wear.
It's just wrapping up. Yeah.
Like, she just wears it like Rocky and, going up the steps.
Yeah. And I don't say that blaming her. I'm just saying, like, oh, that's a minefield. I don't even. Yeah. Yeah. She's. Was not set up to win with that. But I actually was in what I care about is that he actually resigned, that there was follow through with this, that it seemingly did seem to matter that this person not just had this, you know, you can say inappropriate or not relationship, but then tried to move the system around on behalf of someone that he was having a sexual relationship with and all of the power dynamics and trickiness that come with that, that it did come back and bite him. And I was glad to see that.
Okay, so the next thing we got is a little story on some James Gunn. And Mallory's going to pull some heavy lifting for us today.
Oh, yeah.
So James Gunn returns as Guardians of the Galaxy director. As originally reported by Deadline, director James Gunn was rehired by Disney this past week to direct Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. You may remember that Gunn was fired back in August after some old tweets resurfaced where he made jokes about pedophilia. The president of Disney Studios, Alan Horn, came to this decision by meeting with several directors to discuss the incident. And in addition to the apology by James Gunn, Horn thought it best to bring him back. This also came after the fact that James Gunn accepted a job directing Suicide Squad 2 over at DC. Is this important? Do you care?
You guys, it's all because of Suicide Squad 2.
That's it.
They were like, oh.
You mean, wait, another franchise used him and there was no negative repercussions? His whole stuff, like all of the accusations against him originally, which I do think we touched on back then.
Yeah, we did.
Were so done in bad faith and just garbage.
Was like it Charlie Kirk?
Yes.
You said?
It's people who are at these massive levels of management and big companies that fundamentally do not understand the internet.
Yeah.
And that's what's scary about all of this for me. So I have a lot of weird opinions about this. On one hand, I'm like, oh, I'm glad that they're doing right by him. But on the other side, my constant opinion about stuff like this, I'm like, you know how many other directors there are in the world that would really love this opportunity?
Yeah.
I'm with you. And we're also always trying to advocate for that. But the other thing that James Gunn like created and built this iteration of Guardians, there's an ownership to it, an artistic ownership that I want to see through. But there's also, he handled the apology tour, as it goes, better than anyone because there was an authenticity to it. I think it was unfair how it came up about him anyway. But the reality is he said some horrific stuff, like as a shock jock or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think he had like accountability for that. And I don't think for us as a culture and for like artists and filmmakers, if we don't like allow for people to better themselves and to apologize and grow from it, if it is just that like, nope, you failed, you're out, then where is there ever going to be motivation for people to do better?
Yeah.
So for James Gunn, like, sure, the reality is Warner was like, oh man, we're going to lose all this money if he switches franchises. We want him because he had really successful outings with Guardians.
Yeah, money fucking talks.
Money talks. Yep. But I do think it worked out nicely in the sense of we can acknowledge like, oh, someone apologized, they took responsibility for it, they're bettering themselves and working towards something in what is good faith. I think that's crucial.
Yeah, it is amazing to me that James Gunn, someone who just tweeted some horrific stuff, did a better apology than so many of these other guys who actually did things.
Right.
Yeah, that's the. Oh, that's so weird. But, you know, maybe Volume 3 will be less sexist. Okay, so then we'll move on.
Oh, okay, you guys. I definitely like this one. Not to give you a spoiler on my is this important level, but Penelope Spheeris, who I feel like this room can like all hold a kinship for of like, yes.
Oh, yeah. A candle just lit up in my heart.
Yes, exactly. who, funny enough, I love her being known as the director of Wayne's World. Many of us know her from The Decline of Western Civilization, all three parts, as well as a slew of other great films that include so many weird comedies. Like, it's kind of incredible. She had a great interview with the AV Club this week. She hasn't made a feature since 2011, and so they were asking her about that. And she was saying that one of the main reasons she left was after working with Harvey Weinstein on the film Senseless. And, quote, they kept rewriting it, and it's in my contract that I gotta do what they say, you know? And at one one point, I said to Bob Weinstein, I don't think this works. And he goes, this is my fucking money and I'm going to spend it any fucking way I want to. And how are you going to argue with that? I think my Weinstein was pretty priceless.
That was good.
I really worked on that. And then she also goes on to say that as a woman in the film industry, if she has one flop, she will forever be in director jail, which I think we've all heard of happening. And she says now, she doesn't even want to do another movie. Quote, I don't need them. I really don't. Especially now, what am I going to do? Work for a year on a movie and make $50,000? They can blow me. That's a quote. You can print that. So I hope you all did. And after printing it, ask yourself, is this important? And do you care?
I think it's totally important, and I totally care about this. I feel like so many women in this industry struggle for so, so long, and we always put the onus on them to keep fighting and keep being amazing. When do women just get to be like, screw this? You know, when do we just get to take a fucking break? Like, I get it. I totally understand this.
I do think it's so hard because it is ironic that it's traced back to a Weinstein film. It sounds like it was a sort of work-for-hire situation, too. But it's also one of those things, the article detailed of how, A, she has a partner named Sin, and I would like nothing less for Penelope Spheris than to have a partner named Sin. Mm-hmm. And B, that they're basically like real estate people. Like, she's buying houses and renting them out. Like, she has tenants and things. And there's something satisfying of her being able, like, to walk into her sunset and say, like, yeah, I don't need you. I'm doing great on my own. But then there's also a bummer to me of like, oh, think of the production company Penelope Spheris could be running with kind of business acumen. And if she'd been able to, you know, if the planets aligned in a different way, if she hadn't had to fight unnecessary battles. And the director jail thing we've definitely touched on before, but she's not wrong. Like,
no, she's not.
That is a very true thing, and it's harder. It's always, from my opinion, it is always harder for women to get out of the free fall from a film that's perceived to be not successful.
Oh, yeah. Well, Penelope Spheris is just fucking cool. I think we can just leave it at that, right?
That's true.
Yeah, she's just fucking cool. Okay, so that's it for It a Dick.
That time made me giggle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will be right back after we hear about the Max Fun Drive. And we've got Alonzo and Ricky sneaking into the studio. We'll be right back.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to Who Shall Ya? I'm your boy, Ricky Carmona, the host with me in the studio.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And April Wolf.
We'll get right back to on our show in just a few moments. First, it is that time of the year, y'all.
It sure is.
Yeah, it is. It is the Max Fun Drive, y'all, where, first of all, let us say how grateful we are to everybody who contributes to Maximum Fun. Your contributions directly support all the shows on our network, but they, most importantly, directly support our show.
This one.
Oh, yeah, this one.
Because, I mean,
to.
Shout out to all the other shows. Max Fun has 872 shows right now on their network.
They're all great, blah, blah, blah,
but we're here to talk
about us.
Jesse Thorne, woo. But goddamn, Who Shia is on fire, though. Who Shia is the real, son. It is the real. And the reason that we are the real is because of your contributions to our show. Shout out to all our listeners. Listeners out there who are members, we thank you dearly. Listeners out there who are not members yet, we are waiting for you with open arms.
We're here for you.
We want you to come to us and pledge your money so that we can keep doing this show. This show don't happen without y'all. So we want you to come to us with your contributions, and keep it continue.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you are a donor to this show, then you are a part of this show.
Yes.
And people are part of the show in a lot of ways. Maybe you've called the Who Shot line and left a question for us that we can talk about. Maybe you're one of the many active participants in our Facebook page who are letting us know about odd little things that are happening in the streaming universe, or posting articles about movies that are coming out, or things we didn't know about our favorite directors. These are great conversations. We really enjoy having them with you guys and learning things from you and answering questions and engaging with the audience. And, our Twitter folks are great. We love when you retweet the show, when you ask us questions there. when you call us out on getting things wrong, whatever it is, that's really awesome. So, you know, this is, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, we couldn't do it without you guys. But literally, you all play a very key role in putting this together. And one of the ways in which our listeners really do make this show possible, make it happen, keep the lights on week after week, is by being a donor to the Max Fund Drive and being a supporter of all the shows that we do here. And specifically of you know, when that moment comes where they ask you which show, give us that check in the box. Who shot you? We feel great knowing that you're out there supporting us and that you like what we do and that you want to hear more of it.
And, you know, let's say a little bit about what we do. I know you guys listen to the show, but there are things that make us a little bit special. I mean, yes, our tag is what we're not all straight white men who are talking about movies. But the thing is that we do try to do something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the big movies of every week. You know, a lot of podcasts do that. But we try to do it in a different way that puts context into it. You
Absolutely.
Know,
Speak
we're talking
on it.
About not just like film history and some, you know, smaller movies that might be a little bit like it. And we all have our own background and we try to bring that to this and learn from each other. And I think that I've learned so much from Alonzo and Ricky in the time that we've been together that I also hope that you guys are learning something too. You know, you come back and it's a little bit like fun school. It's sort of like
yes.
the way that I approach everything that we do, right? You know, like, can you learn a little something?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and people, you know, will get into an argument about whether or not a movie is political or not. And all movies are political. And
yeah, we start with that baseline.
Pretty much, That's... yeah. And sometimes, you know,
it's the foundation.
Their attempts to be not political is the way that they're being political.
Yes.
You know, and so I think we all bring our own different perspectives, our own life perspectives, and our own aesthetic choices and preferences and viewpoints into the room and, you know, apply those to movies that maybe nobody else is talking about in that same way.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We live in a world now where Academy Award nominee Felicity Huffman is out there just giving money illegally to help her children's future. And I'm saying, y'all don't need to do that out there. Y'all can give your legal funds to our show.
It's totally legal to
yes.
donate to
Absolutely.
Who Shot Ya.
And so educational.
Yes. Yes. We are here to give you that hot fire content, yo. I wasn't here last week. I listened to our episode about Greta. Getting my learn on. Learning Neil Jordan, Company of Wolves, yo.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to film school. Just support Who Shot Ya.
Yes.
We'll get you through this.
We got goals on this show. Max Fun has goals. We want to get 25,000 new or upgrading members during this Max Fun drive. I don't think that's a hard ask.
Nope.
I don't think that's a hard ask at all.
No.
It can be done.
Yes. But Ricky, though. But Ricky. How can I become a member? I'm glad you asked, yo. I'm glad you asked. It's very simple. Number one, go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Woo. When you get there, you're going to see a grid of membership levels to choose from $5 a month to $200 a month. You will provide your credit card along with some other basic information. And voila, you're a member, yo. It's that easy. Don't forget to select Who Shot Ya when you're asked for your listener habits. Now, the question about your listening habits, they influence how member funds get distributed among all the Max Fund shows. So answer some questions for us, and then we will know how to make our content better for you. That's a win-win right there. Your contribution will process automatically each month, and it renews automatically each year. You won't need to do anything else unless your credit card information changes or you decide to cancel. But I'm going to tell you right now, yo, our shit is so hot, you ain't going to cancel. That's
not
anything,
an option. If anything, you'll upgrade.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. Alonzo knows what's up. April knows what's up.
I'm smiling.
We're all smiling,
for
yo.
For the podcast audience.
That's what we do. So we thank you for all your contributions out there. We look forward to any new members and your new future contributions as well.
Thanks for listening.
And now back to Who Shot Ya, the greatest goddamn Max Fun show there is.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. Hope you really enjoyed that break. I'm here today with
Treya Clark.
And Mallory O'Mara.
And I'm April Wolf. Okay, so our main discussion tonight is going to be a movie from 2014. It is called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night by Anna Lily Amirpour. And we've got Mallory here to give us a quick synopsis.
So this movie is essentially an Iranian vampire Western movie. It's about this young man who lives in Iran, and he is very poor, and his father is addicted to drugs. And as he's walking around this, I think she calls it Bad City. It's this weird sort of like otherworldly representation of the city filled with despair. He ends up crossing paths with this young woman who is very strange and always alone, and she's always skateboarding. And she's wearing a chador, I think is the word for it. So he's very intrigued by her, and it's about him and her and how they navigate this very desperate and sad and like poverty-filled world. And I think it's really a film about what monsters are.
Ooh, damn. She leapt right to the heart of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have my little swim cap on. I am into it.
You did.
I love this movie so much.
We're going to try to synchronize with you. Okay. So
nice. Good imagery. Good water imagery.
Actually, I would pay to see a three of us doing some sort of synchronized swim to this movie.
Yeah, I'm not a great swimmer, so let's go.
I'll carry you. I'm a good swimmer.
What do you guys think of the film? I mean, Mallory obviously loves it.
Yeah. Well, this one, so obviously saw this back in the day, and this is actually a perfect, so it premiered at Sundance in the Next Section. This is a first-time filmmaker. It's a lower budget. And my background as a festival programmer, like, this is the good stuff for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, a first-time filmmaker who has a really strong authorial voice, who's doing something really unique, but that's immediately immersive. There's recognizable elements to it.
Oh, it's black and white, I should also say that.
Yeah, it's black and white.
That are watching
and
it.
I love that you said, because it's all in Farsi, and so it is set in Iran. That's the implication of it, obviously, because they're all speaking. But then it's also, there's incongruity. Help me.
It's incongruous.
There are things that just don't line up. You're like, no, that's not actually what any part of Iran. And it was all shot here.
Yeah, so it's a weird imaginary in-between place.
Yeah.
I almost felt like, remind me a little bit of Guy Madden sometimes. Like
interesting.
The way that, you know, they can create a place that's real, but it's not real. You know, there's like a heightened element to it.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like an 80s throwback movie, you know, where you have like a town or a city that's like the nowhere town.
Sure.
Or it's like, it doesn't really exist, but it really embodies a sort of feeling, and that's what this movie feels like to me.
I would say even like early 90s, mid 90s stuff, like Six String Samurai is the way that like Anna Lily Amirpour's, even the Bad Batch too, like something about the production design and the way that she makes these low budget films, it reminds me of that weird
weird,
I don't even know, I'm just like, it's just Six String Samurai.
She's a hybrid crafter. Like that's one of those things about this film, because on the surface there's a lot about it that you're like, if that's my flavor, like
if you
I don't
pitched
watch
this
a lot
movie
of,
to me, I was like, oh, it's a foreign language, black and white, weird Iranian vampire movie. I'd be like, wait, what?
Maybe vampire, but then you get into the details, like the styling of it is so incredible and so consistent. And that again, with that idea of a first-time filmmaker, of what someone is bringing to the table artistically to elevate their budget and to elevate even the story. Like the main guy, who's just a smoke show, such a babe. Mm-hmm. He's totally styled like James Dean.
Yes.
Like he has this his T-shirt and jeans are like just straight out of The Outsiders. Like,
it's a the style reference for sure is giant.
Yeah.
Giant
for sure.
With, you know, Elizabeth Taylor and James Dean and like in the oil derricks.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
pumping.
Almost Lynchian in that way. It's like Twin Peaks, where it's like, you know that it's supposed to take place in the 90s, but everyone's wearing 50s clothes.
Like
it's
saddle shoes.
Yes. Yeah. It's that sort of weird other. And it gives that sense of otherworldliness to this movie that, that's a great way to do it on a low budget. She's so smart.
So that's the thing, is you watch it, and again, I'm almost worried of all of the things, the details you could bring out almost sound like, am I making this sound too cerebral or intellectual? Because it's a really enjoyable film. Like there's a lot to you just soak into the vibe of it. There's also, you mentioned the lead woman. Did we say there's a vampire element to this, which I love?
Yeah, played by Sheila Van.
She's so great. And one of the styling things that I love of this, talking about smartness, is she wears this chador, which is like a long, it's the headpiece of what the, I'm not sure what all of the garment would be called, but it's basically covers the top of her head and it swoops all the way to the ground.
Yes.
And she wears it skateboarding. She wears it at night, but she wears it over like jeans and a t-shirt. And so it gives her elements. It harkens to, it's the Nosferatu cape, mm-hmm. but it's also a superhero cape because, like, the first person you see her do something bad to is a total a-hole. Like,
oh, I love that scene.
It's so good. So there's just, like, that kind of thing of, like, oh, you're reinventing all of this stuff that's foreign to me, but putting a twist on it that I'm like, yes, I get all of your references. I may not have seen someone work with the Shador like that before, but I've seen a cape.
Yeah. How do you feel about, you know, because this is one of those movies that definitely, you know, has a filmic history mm-hmm. inside it. How do you guys feel normally about movies that have these very kind of clear and distinct references to other films?
That's a good point.
I guess it depends on the genre, really. Like, I think, because I'm not a big superhero person, so I constantly feel lost when I watch superhero movies, because it's like I can feel the ghosts of all the references that are happening
yep,
to me.
Sure.
And I feel like I miss, there's a layer of something that I'm missing. On the flip side of that, I'm a huge monster nerd, so I get all monster nerd references if I'm watching a monster movie. So it's really hard to say for me. It all depends. It's like, if you get it, yes, it's cool. If not, but I think what's cool about this movie is you can get into it even without having those references, unlike being in a superhero movie.
But once you find those out, and that's one of the things I think the horror genre that, you know, a lot of people talk about quite often is that it definitely understands that it's standing on the shoulders of giants. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, in every successful horror film, you see references to other horror films from yes. its filmic history.
Well, this, I think the other thing is how people craft those references.
Yeah.
And Lily has such a strong eye for things. So it's that idea. It's like cooking, right? Like, everybody can use the same ingredients, but some people you're like, yeah, I get it. You liked that he liked pepper, so you covered yours with pepper. And her, you're like, oh, there's pepper in here, but it's on the strawberries. This metaphor got a bit away from me, but the idea of how people are using it, because she was compared a lot to Tarantino after this came out.
Yeah, because he's the one who does that. He's
exactly.
the one who has, like, a film language.
But
yeah.
again, on the festival side, I cannot, and actually April probably has as well, the amount of first-time filmmakers I've seen that I'm like, I get it, you love Quentin Tarantino, mm-hmm. because what I'm seeing is a rehashing. It's
yeah.
like they're just appropriating what he's doing and like, oh, I want these quick cuts. Or Edgar Wright people bite his style all the time.
Oh,
of like,
yeah.
Hoop, hoop, I want to get in and out of a scene. And I'm like, great. He that's his style.
Yeah.
Whereas she, I get the Tarantino elements because there's a musicality to it. There's
yeah,
a coolness.
The soundtrack is amazing.
But there's not a single thing in it that I'm like, oh, he did that before.
Yeah.
Or he used that song.
Him.
Not
yeah,
at all.
Exactly.
It's more of how she's bringing those things to light. It's how she's using the pepper, you guys. Nailed it.
There you go.
I also would like to talk about maybe just the making of a monster. What makes a good monster? Because, you know, this is a great monster, right?
Oh.
She's amazing.
Well, that's what's amazing to me about this movie is that I think she shows us this array of how many different kinds of monsters there are. Because
yeah.
we have the vampire, the classic vampire, like, idea that she really turns on her head, which I love so much. She's living by herself. And there's a lot of elements of, like, you know, a single woman being independent and how that's scary to so many men. But then you have the drug element and how drugs turn you into a monster. You have one of the side characters who's a sex worker, and that's a kind of monster to some people. And there's so many ideas of, like, how you define a monster in this movie that it's just, when I say this movie's a monster movie, a lot of people kind of look at me funny because a lot of people don't consider a vampire, like, truly a monster, but I think this is such a, like,
no,
a
he's
perfect...
like cool usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is. That actually, two things. One, I totally agree on the monster element. And the other thing, like, Dominic Raines plays this amazing bad guy in this, and he has the most, I sound super superficial because I keep talking about how attractive the whole cast is, but
this is a very good looking.
They're a very good looking cast.
Beautiful.
And Dominic Raines is just this stunning, beautiful man, and they've somehow made him just so ugly with his facial hair, his haircut, all this. But apparently, even the tattoo on his face means pimp in Farsi, which is kind of amazing because he plays a pimp, you guys. It's pretty
literal.
But to me, you know, like, you meet him and you're like, oh, that's the monster. That's the bad guy. He's, like, shaking down this old man drug addict. Mm-hmm. He's stealing stuff. He's intimidating a sex worker. Like, there's all these. So when you, it's one of those when you immediately meet the real monster of the piece, you're already on her side. So you're like, yeah, get
oh, yeah.
that guy.
Like, bite
Who
his
else
finger
can
off.
We get?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the naming of monsters? Because I like that this monster is just named the girl.
Right.
That's just her name. It's just the girl. She's like, she has no beginning, no end. That's,
I read
girl.
Someone had like a Bechdel argument about this film, because does it count since there's that idea of to pass the Bechdel test, you have to have two women in conversation that are named characters. And since she doesn't actually have a name, obviously.
That's an interesting argument.
Well, they were more, it was a sort of facetious, because very clearly to me it does. But the naming of it as the girl, it fits with there's a lot of subtle gender swaps throughout this, right? Like the main guy, the James Dean that you're following, has like, he's got his like his 50s muscle arm, but he's still male beauty.
He's the one who's shirtless in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, he's stunning. But he's also like a sweet, delicate little, like that guy, like he kind of like backs away in fear from the bad, like the drug dealer. And like, there's things of it that he has a softness to him, which is a nice switch. And that the idea of, oh, that there's a new stranger in town that's lurking in the shadows is going to come help this, that the stranger is the woman, and that the person who needs help from all of this bad stuff in their life is the guy. There's nice just little gender reversals throughout it too.
And I think that really actually ties in with looking at her as a monster, because I think it's interesting that she's the girl and she's not the woman, even though she's clearly living by herself. You know, she's taking care of herself, however, by drinking people's blood, which, you know, you got to do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, that she's called the girl, she's referred to as the girl, even though she is a woman, really shows why people, like this further layer of why people think she's a monster. It's not even that she's skateboarding around and, you know, drinking people's blood, but that she's by herself, being independent. She's unmarried. She doesn't have kids. I think it was a choice, and I can't prove, I have no idea. I guess I could ask the director if I ever got the chance, but I think it was a choice to call her girl and not woman.
Yeah. I mean, let's just decide it was the choice.
Boom.
Well, I think so, because it's right in the title, right? Like, there's something about a girl walks home alone at night that I'm like, threat. Like,
yes.
And the threat is not the girl.
Yes.
Like, when you read that sentence, you're like, oh, someone help her out.
Yep.
Get her. Is she armed? Like, there's, you read that sentence and make inferences, and what they are is not what this film is, which is the fun of it.
When this came out, there was a lot of talk about Reclaim the Night. You guys remember that
movement?
Yeah. No, I don't.
Take Back the Night.
Yeah.
You're thinking of Reclaiming My Time.
No,
I bet it is Take Back the Night, yeah.
Yeah. So, but there's a like a kind of movement that wasn't, you know, necessarily like TM, like that kind of thing, but just like reclaiming the night of what it is to be a woman alone in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
There was a big movement. I remember going to marches about that in college.
Yeah. I always say, I've seen so many great tweets, and I agree with them, that like, if people are like, oh, what would your superpower be? Like, being able to jog at night, being able to walk home by myself at night. Great. So I love this idea that, you know, like you said, girl walks home alone at night. It sounds almost like an old monster movie where you're like, oh, no, like you're expecting something to attack her. And I think it's great that they play her. She's so feminine. You know, she's like the, when she's underneath her chador, it's, you know, she's almost like a French boat striped shirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's listening to her record. She's just is very, very feminine. And so she like would look very vulnerable.
I've got a question for you guys. What director would you like to see making a monster movie?
Ooh. Man, that's tricky. Because there's a lot of directors I'd like to see making more things, full stop. Monster movies.
Jovanka Vukovic. She's got Riot Girls coming out this year, but I would love to see her do like a straight up action-y, fun monster movie.
Nice. Floria Sigismondi. I'll stick with the female directors. Floria directed The Runaways, which is obviously not a monster movie, but had a nice sort of
energy.
Darkness. But she has an amazing music video track record
all
super gothic and dark and weird. Like she did a video with the White Stripes that involved, I think, Lily Cole, Karen Elson. Oof. The supermodel that was married to Jack White, in these like fetish toe shoes, like going up a step. And I think that she has a darkness to her and a visual quality that would be really interesting with a monster.
That would be
brought
awesome.
In. Yeah.
I'm trying to think like the people who can do atmosphere really well, because that's what you want.
That's
why music video came to mind.
The atmosphere to sell the monster so well. And I'm thinking like Lynn Ramsey. Because she's an atmosphere director, you know, there's the sound design, the editing, the color theory, all of it is, it's so impeccable that I'm like, she could sell a fucking monster.
It'd be a beautiful monster movie.
It'd be like blunt and violent, I'm sure. so violent, I'm sure.
These are great. Let's give me the money for this and we'll get these underway.
Yeah, Hollywood, get call us up. Yeah. We're ready to go.
So let's finish this up and say, you know, what do you think? If you can't really screen it.
I don't think screen it's an option.
Okay. All right.
But definitely stream this movie. It's on Netflix right now. It's not a long movie to watch. It's super fun. It's super easy to get into. It's not a movie that, it feels kind of cerebral, but it's not a movie you have to sit down and like, all right, I really got to pay attention to this. It's just fun. It's paced really, really well. I recommend this movie to so many people.
I would also agree to screen it. I think stream it. We can't screen it.
You can't. You are not allowed to screen it.
There's a law.
But yes, I think you should stream it. I think there's a lot to pick up. I think it's an enjoyable film and so much to take in. But it's also, if you're a lover of film and its creation and watching a talent grow, knowing that this is a first-time offering for something, I think that's nice for people to keep in mind of, like, this is what's possible with low-budget films, with people who've, like, made some shorts and taught themselves, like, how to get there. And I think that that's an interesting way to look at it, too, on top of just kind of enjoying the beautiful visuals and story.
I also say stream it, obviously. I was a big fan when it came out. Still a big fan. Love talking about it. Could probably keep going on for a very long time, I think.
It'll just turn into a version of, like, do you remember when the guy walked into the thing? I love that.
Yeah. And then, like, when they're talking,
I'll turn into Chris Farley interviewing Paul McCartney.
You remember that time where he thought that his dead wife was that cat? And I thought, oh my God, what a cute cat. I hope nothing bad happens to that cat.
Oh my God.
That cat is so chubby and delicious.
Oh, God, I love a cat. All right, so I think we're in consensus. You should stream it.
Here, here.
All right, so we're going to take another break to hear about the Max Fun Drive, and we've got Alonzo. We were able to tether him in. We couldn't quite wrap ourselves around Ricky. He just ran too fast, but we'll be...
He's quick.
He's too quick. So let me throw it to us in the Max Fun Drive. We'll be right back. Hi, it's April Wolf from Who Shot Ya Again. Andrea's here, and Alonzo's back. He snuck in for the break.
It's true, but I left most of my voice in the car.
Yeah, I don't know what... He, like, went outside. Someone, like, slashed at his throat. I don't know what happened.
And I smoked 18 cigarettes.
What are we here for? Why are we here in the studio?
What would be worth Alonzo risking his voice?
And I know.
I have to tell you guys, I know the answer, and the answer is the Max Fun Drive.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay, so Max Fun Drive. Hashtag Max Fun Drive, I should say.
When is it happening? It is happening now.
Now.
Currently, now. Presently, the
You're
most exciting
in
thing
it.
In the world.
Yes.
It's
You're
all around
it.
You. Yes.
And so if people, you know, would like to support our show, Who Shot Ya, this would be the time that they could donate and they could become members and you can support monetarily with monthly memberships, right?
Which,
right.
as I like to say, because the show is free, so this is like, do you want to put a tip in the donation jar at the end of the bar to say thank you? I enjoy listening to what you put in my ear holes.
That's well great. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hey, it's not like you just walk away with that feeling of, oh yeah, I'm underwriting
Wait,
this puppy.
Are you saying there's something in it for me if I donate?
There are indeed.
What?
Man, I love getting stuff.
Special gifts, prizes, and bonuses.
Oh my God.
So now, starting at the $5 level, the Wait. Crazily affordable, so convenient $5 level.
Just $5 a month.
Yeah.
Just it's, $5
it's straight
a month.
Up like giving $1.25 to a barista or a podcaster like us
per
for every
episode. Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
That's gonna get you over 100 hours of bonus episodes that are only available, that are exclusive to our monthly members.
You guys, our bonus episode for Who Shot Ya is so dope.
Oh,
it is
yeah.
so good. It is like fulfilling a dream of being like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 riffer, and at the same time.
It's as close as I'll ever get.
It's close as I will ever get, right? The movie is one of my favorites.
So Ricky and April and I got to share a couch with none other than Mystery Science Theater's and Maximum Fun's Jonah Ray to watch...
Child's Play!
Oh my God.
The 1988 original.
What about that $10 monthly membership?
So for $10... you get the enamel pin, the one-of-a-kind enamel pin. There's one designed for every Max Fun show, but you're going to want the Who Shot You pin.
Oh, my God. This one is so nice.
It's so cute.
It's so gorgeous.
Oh, my God.
Frankly, words cannot do it justice. You just got to go look at this thing. But if you are a fan of the show, you'll get it, you'll know it, you'll love it, and you'll want to wear it everywhere. You'll
everywhere.
Want to slap it on your battle jacket, put it on your work tote bag, whatever it is you're doing. You want that pin to be with
it's you. It's fashionable. It's a conversation starter. There's nothing not to like.
Okay, this $20 monthly membership gift. This is pretty cool. This is a beautiful 18 by 24 inch 550 piece Maximum Fun puzzle.
Nice.
It's so cool. It's super retro looking. It looks like the best movie poster for a film that someone cooler than you knows about.
Yeah. It could be the side of a van.
Oh, which is most
that's how
the highest compliment
is.
You can give to artwork. Yeah. And that's for $20 monthly membership. If I'm a $20 monthly member, do I get my hot hands on a pin?
You get the puzzle.
Oh, okay.
And the pin.
And the pin.
And the hours and hours and hours.
So I'm just like accruing good
top
stuff.
Top drawer bonus content.
It's amazing. And depending how good you are at putting together puzzles, this could give you endless, endless entertainment. Yeah. This would give me endless entertainment.
If you are bad at puzzles, this will fulfill a year for you.
Oh,
you
no
can listen
question.
To it every time you listen to Who Shot Ya.
Yeah, I always think I'm good at puzzles because I tend to do them with large groups, but I made it one by myself and it's
no,
a very sad
out, no.
thing.
Okay, how about that? $35 monthly membership. Give it to me. What is it?
Now we're kicking it into high.
It's good. As April knows, I'm a fan of drinking the hot beverage, not the cold beverage.
G I loves like stuff. Cold beverages.
Yes. but I love a hot beverage, and this is a very classy glass mug, and it has the Max Fun Rocket logo on it.
Mm.
And I will look, oh my gosh, you guys, it actually can tie in because I can be holding my sweet mug as a $35 monthly member,
mm-hmm.
and then while I'm very slowly doing my 550-piece puzzle and wearing my enamel pin so that if anyone sees me, like, they know I'm down with the Who Shot Ya, and then while I'm listening and enjoying some of that content.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And if you were me, it would be Murder, She Wrote on mute in the corner. There's
this is a mug that you can take to the office, and then when people ask, you'd be like, it's from Max Fun, you should be listening, stop stealing my mug, Sylvia. I put it in the rack. That doesn't mean you get to just grab it and use it. It's mine.
What a pitch.
Send Sylvia to the website, which is April.
MaximumFun.org/donate. I feel
that's
like
right.
I'm doing an auction.
It's perfect.
And MaximumFun.org/donate.
That gal can get a mug of her own.
And you can do it now. And you should do it now because otherwise you'll forget. Because if you're like me, you will forget everything and your husband will get real mad at you. So again, if you would like to be an upgrading member or a new member, this is your time. This is your chance. You should go for it.
This is where it all happens. We super appreciate all of our listeners, but we especially appreciate those of you who are supporting Max Fun, who are keeping the lights on around here. And yes, this is the time of year where you can either become a new member, you can sustain your membership, or even better, upgrade that membership. Oh. Maybe some of these prizes are making you realize, you know what? Time for me to go bigger here.
Yeah.
Time for me to really make a splash because I want my hands on that thing.
And we want that 25,000 new and upgrading members. That's our goal, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. That's it.
Who shot ya?
Who shot ya?
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm April Wolf, filling in for Ricky Carmona, and I'm joined today by...
Drea Clark.
And Mallory O'Mara.
Hi! Okay, so we've got a call from the Who Shot line, and we love to play it. It is from Mark from Chicago. Casey?
Hi, this is Mark from Chicago again. Considering Shape of Water, subtitled Abe Sapien Gets Some, won an Academy Award, obviously the monster movie genre has hit the mainstream. What monster movie do each of you think is unfairly ignored by history or time? Mine happens to be 1990s Tremors, which I think is perfect for the genre. And otherwise, I'd be really happy to see hear what you folks think. Love the show, as usual. Have a great one.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, Mallory, you want to go first? Honors?
So mine has not been lost to history. It only came out a few years ago. It's Colossal, directed by Nacho Vigalondo. And this movie, it broke my... I saw this opening weekend when it came out, and it broke my heart that it didn't get more traction. And I still know so many people that have not only not seen it, but have not heard of it. Mm-hmm. And it stars Anne Hathaway, and she is this woman. She's an alcoholic. Her boyfriend has kicked her out of the house, and she goes to stay at her parents' summer home, essentially, where she's living for free. She doesn't have a job. She's really hit rock bottom. And her old childhood friend who runs a bar, Jason Sudeikis, who's also an alcoholic, hires her to work there, and then follows this incredible exploration of addiction, alcoholism, abusive relationships. Because while all this is happening, on the news constantly is this story about this massive, gigantic monster that has been attacking Seoul in South Korea. Mm-hmm. And should I spoil it? Or?
No.
Okay.
Just know that it's...
It ends up, the monster in Seoul, South Korea, ends up being involved in some way in what's happening in the main story. And it's very fascinating. And I think it is one of the, my favorite thing in the entire world is when weird movies use like monsters or weird situations as metaphors for things like Swiss Army Man, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this movie, I think, and this monster is such a great metaphor. And it's not a monster movie in the traditional sense where people are dying and there's boobs everywhere. But this movie is just so fun and so creative.
I mean, there's some boobs under shirts for sure.
But
sure.
It's not a non-boob movie, but they're not like flapping in the breeze.
Which is its whole separate genre.
Yeah.
The boob flap.
The boob flap.
Genre.
Breeze genre.
Yeah. No, that's a good choice.
It is so fantastic. And it is streaming on Amazon Prime right now.
Oh, gotta get on that monster.
That one, and you're so right. Like, we were talking about this. There is something about how it understands relationships. Someone was saying to me that movie demonstrates codependency better than almost anything.
It's so brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so well crafted.
But like, you don't understand that you're being taught things because you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm just watching this fun movie of this woman who's kind of like fallen apart and gone home, and then like, mm-hmm. oh, there's monsters somewhere else.
And as we talked about a little bit before the show, for a male director to convey a flawed woman so well is an unsexualized version of a flawed woman is really, really refreshing for me.
Yeah. I'll high five Nacho for that too.
Yeah. Double high five.
Put me in the
high five
line.
Drea.
Okay. I want to give a few like shout outs because when I was first thinking of underrepresented or underappreciated monster movies, there's some terrible ones that I love. So here for Munchies, which is like...
Oh, God, I love Munchies so much.
It's so good. It's like a Gremlins ripoff that straight up has Harvey Korman playing twins. One of the twins is evil. Obvs. It is... But it's like if the Gremlins were pervier.
Oh, my God.
It's like Ghoulies, too.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, those are so yeah. You get it.
Yeah.
Munchies.
Sorry.
So like Munchies, I wanted to give a shout to Chud.
Oh my God, so
because,
good.
Cannibalistic like, humanoid underground dwellers.
You can't. Yeah, you can't not like bring a humanoid monster into the mix.
So fun.
The relic. From
oh my God.
That's on my list for
oh,
sure.
Oh no, shut up.
No,
yeah,
no, no.
Because that is one that I'm like, you guys, like the relic is very real, and it's also It's a monster movie that's like inside an art museum, but so it feels like a lockdown movie. You know when things are like locked into one space, but it's a really unique space. And it's Penelope Ann Miller and as Ricky would say, old boy. oh my God, this is killing
you know,
me.
Oh
I can
boy.
See him. Tom Sizemore.
Some people don't realize it's an adaptation from the book Relic by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, which is the first in a very amazing series that I've been reading since I was 14 years old. Still coming out. But it's,
okay, that's exciting. I did not know that. Well, my actual one, funnily, these are all actual. I think they're all under, or could handle a new set of eyes on them. But weirdly, that ties in a way with Colossal that I hadn't seen is, again, in this sort of kaiju monster, which is Cloverfield. Which is directed by Matt Reeves. And when it came out, there was a minute there where, like, that found footage handheld thing, I was like, kill me dead if I see another one of those. But it managed to be that, but not be a mockumentary.
Yes.
And that it also had that idea of filmmaking of a monster that was so enormous and taking over an entire huge city. And you got a sense of that, like this huge threat, like physical threat, but you don't see it. It's the like shark in Jaws, right? Like you don't see it till the very end. There's a nice sort of bait and switch with all of it. So a lot about the interpersonal relationships with this group of like, I think eventually six people that you're sort of trying to flee across Manhattan with. I think Manhattan. I don't know New York very well. You're trying to flee across some part of the city.
I think it was
with
Jersey City.
They're probably,
I don't know.
Probably took place somebody, in Baltimore.
Someone from some very angry New Yorkers going to write it.
Set me right. But Cloverfield was one that I think if you go back and you look at it, the structure of how they're telling the story and how they're revealing the monster, I think it handles its monster really well.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Deep Rising's monster. What? You guys remember Deep Rising?
No.
I feel, okay.
98? 1998?
I was barely born then, April.
It was a good time. 50. I would probably pair that with, you know, some Tremors love, too.
Yes.
Mark, I'm from Chicago. I also deeply love Tremors. I got my job at LA Weekly because I sent them this like long essay about why Tremors is one of the best movies ever
made. That's incredible.
You're
an American hero.
They're like, wow, you're all right, go for it. And I was just like, yeah, I'm going to tell you what the fuck is up with this.
I love that. Wait, will you please tell me what Deep Risings is about?
Because Deep Rising. Okay. I was saying like possessive, it's monster.
Oh, got
but,
you.
So, but okay. Deep Rising is like a God,
is this
so
an ocean
dumb
movie?
They're in like the South China Sea, yeah, and there's like a heist going on at like a ship. So it's almost like a Poseidon Adventure, or sorry, the Poseidon with like another heist, like a 90s heist film. So there's a monster that comes too, and so everyone's
all
trying to
things
get like,
I'm
yeah
too I'm afraid of the ocean, so I don't see any movies like that scare the crap out of me.
You're someone who loves horror and monster movies, but you're afraid of the, I love it.
Deeply afraid
I
of the ocean.
It.
Oh God, I love it.
I think it's
because
when
shit
I swim, I can't wear my glasses, so I'm very vulnerable.
You guys, this is none of this bodes well for our synchronized swimming.
I know.
I also want to say that I'm really into the 1972, I think, made for TV movie Gargoyles.
I was worried you wouldn't get random and specific enough.
Gargoyles is one of those movies where you're like, oh, this is going to be so fucking dumb. And then you're like, oh, no, I like this movie.
How did you even see that? Like,
A friend of mine has a horror blog, and he's really good at coming up with old underseen TV horror
okay
films, which there's a treasure trove of really
yeah
good stuff out there when they kind of put money into that kind of movie of the week thing. So I love Gargoyles. And I just want to say Annihilation. I think Annihilation is a monster movie.
Yes.
And I
thank
think
you
it's fantastic.
Thank you. So many people say that's not a horror movie. So many people say that's not a monster movie.
I mean, it's weird because I think it's a monster sci-fi movie. Like, because I don't want to steal sci-fi.
No, it's,
you know, like it's
definitely sci-fi.
Like, but I don't want to just claim it as a horror because like sci-fi always gets people taking shit from it. You know, sci-fi
yeah
has some hard times sometimes.
Yeah, and I feel like that movie definitely didn't get seen as much as it should have.
Yeah,
agreed.
But you know, fuck it, I love that movie.
I
okay
loved it.
So thank you so much, Mark from Chicago, for calling in, and I hope that we answered your question well. So now we would love to actually throw it to our guest Mallory, because we want to have a conversation about her book. It's a new book called The Lady from the Black Lagoon, and she's actually on a book tour right now.
Yes.
And this ties into our whole discussion about monsters, because if you could tell us what your book is about.
So yeah, now listeners will finally figure out why we've been talking about monsters for 45 minutes. So Lady from the Black Lagoon is a biography of a woman named Millicent Patrick. She's the only woman to have designed one of Universal's classic monsters.
Yeah.
She designed Creature from the Black Lagoon. But the reason why so many people don't know about her is that while she was working at Universal, her boss at the Universal Monster Shop was so jealous of all the press and publicity she got for designing Creature that he fired her, and she never worked behind the scenes ever again, and nobody knew what happened to her.
Like, I wish I had a pitchfork right now because I would light it on fire.
Historical yes pitchfork.
A historical
yeah
pitchfork.
Like, you know, honestly, if I were just time traveling, I don't know what I would do, but I would definitely go and pitchfork some dude.
Yes.
Just
for
get,
sure.
Give him a little bit in the ass and be like, hey, I know what you did.
I was envisioning more of a Frankenstein angry mob, but I like your more tactile use of
but
it.
But that's the thing is, like, I would probably become a monster too because as oh Nietzsche says, you know, be
that's
careful
true
those who hunt monsters so that you do not become a monster yourself in the process.
That's exactly word for word what he said.
Yeah.
What's crazy, when you were telling me or telling everyone about this, it's one of those things that I heard it and was like, wait, what? How do I not even know about this woman?
Yes.
I mean, for shame, for shame. And the just because also Creature's a great design. It's yep. not just, oh, it was this woman who had this historical thing. Like, what a loss of whatever else she could have come up with.
Yeah, she designed the monster on Universal's very first science fiction movie. It came from outer space. Mm. She was one of Disney's first female animators. She grew up at Hearst Castle for 10 years during her childhood.
Oh, so she's a weirdo.
Yes.
I love it.
So that's what's amazing to me is when I started researching her, she's been my hero since I was a kid because the only reason I found out about her was I'm a huge monster nerd, and after I watched Creature from the Black Lagoon the first time, I went digging online and I found a picture of her working on the monster suit, and she sort of became a talisman to me to remind me that I belong in this world too, because up until that point all my heroes were Rick Baker, Tom Savini, Dick Smith, all these, you know, male white monster dudes. Yeah. I never thought that I could have a place in that world. So when I started digging into her life, you know, I was like, oh cool, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon, her doing that alone would yeah. be enough of worthy of a book about her. But the fact that she did all these other things, so this book is like, it's monster movie history, it's general film history, but it's also California history, mm-hmm. art history, Disney history.
Yep.
She worked on some really big movies at Disney. She worked on Fantasia, Dumbo. She has like this incredible like feminist art history trail that was just scuffed over for like 65 years.
That's crazy. But it's available now that I can now that I wanted to dig into old Millicent's life.
Yeah, it's on ebook, physical book, audiobook. I read the audiobook, so if you're a Reading Glasses fan,
that's so sweet.
Well, because what some people might not know is that it's not just a biography. It's sort of like Julie and Julia, but for monsters. Because
I
include some of my own story in it. Because while I was writing it, I realized I had a friend who said, "Why should I write this? Why should I read this book if I don't care about Creature from the Black Lagoon?" And I said, oh, because what happened to Millicent Patrick is still happening right now. And
yeah.
it's happened to me. So I write about my journey to find her and also like parallels in my own life. Because I feel like it's so easy to be like, oh, you know, it happened in the 50s.
Sure.
Such a bummer.
Oh, it would never happen now.
Yeah. And I really wanted to be like, no, it is happening now. Here's an example of something from the last movie I shot.
Julie and Julia, but monsters instead of food is the best description. Yeah. Fandango me a book, man.
I'm like ready for that adaptation that Meryl Streep will also be.
Meryl Streep playing me.
Yes.
Which is extra funny because yes. listeners can't see that I'm very heavily tattooed. So imagining Meryl Streep like that.
She could
get Dolly Parton then, huh?
I love that conspiracy theory.
I'm addressing rumors that there are, yeah, that...
That's my
Dolly
favorite completely ridiculous conspiracy theory because it's very obviously
Wait, what is it?
There's a weird conspiracy theory floating around on the internet with like this long article detailing why it's true that Dolly Parton is like full-sleeved, heavily tattooed. But I think just a little while ago she was on Dumplin' Tour with a sleeveless shirt on or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people were like, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think that it was kind of like a blouse or something, like a skin suit that she was wearing.
Dolly Parton like fucking zips herself into a skin suit when she needs to do.
She is a monster too. And she's a monster that we love.
The true current monsters are the conspiracy theorists on the internet. So it's a perfect dismount.
Monsters. Thank you so much for talking about your book, and people can buy it everywhere books are sold.
Everywhere. It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores. If you're listening to this right now, tomorrow night in downtown Los Angeles, tomorrow night in Hollywood at the Rooftop Cinema Club, me and writer of The Crow, David Scow, are doing a Creature from the Black Lagoon screening, and then we're in conversation about monsters. Skylight Books is selling the book there, and I will sign it, and you can watch Creature with me and talk about monsters with me and Scow.
Oh, that's so awesome. Okay, so we are about to move on to Staff Picks.
Oh, that's right.
I know, right? Oh my God, can you believe it?
It whipped along real quick.
Oh, just this ladies chatting. Yep. Drea, you got a staff pick?
I'm so torn. Both, I have something that the minute I rewatched A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, it made me think of a movie, and then us talking about monsters. I'm going to go with monsters in honor of Mallory and her book. Pan's Labyrinth is on Netflix currently, and it's also, I had a conversation recently with someone who hadn't seen it, and I gave them, and I try and never shame people for not seeing things, because it's an exciting, like,
yeah.
In food, they call it, like, I would never yuck someone else's yum, and
oh,
I think
yeah.
That's fair for film as well, but it was someone that I was like, wait, you've never seen, if you haven't seen it, how many people haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth?
That's amazing.
And it's some of the best monster creations, like both the designs of them, but also the full embodiment and characterization that comes through. It has this incredible historical story. There's a family story. There's so much going on. It's such interesting filmmaking. And it's on Netflix, which is basically free if you ignore that you pay a monthly fee. So
yeah, whatever.
yeah, so Pan's Labyrinth in honor of monsters.
Mallory, what's your staff pick for today?
Mine is also a movie that's a monster movie on Netflix, and it's called When Animals Dream. And it is the feminist werewolf movie of my dreams. It is incredible. It's another short movie. I think it's an hour and a half, or less than. It's like an hour and 20 minutes.
Jesus. Okay.
It's a Danish female werewolf movie, and it is... I've been on this book tour and people keep asking me, well, what's your favorite kind of monster? And mine's a female werewolf, because to me, lycanthropy, werewolf legends are so tied into femininity and the
Fucking ginger snaps, like all that. Yeah.
And this movie embodies that so much. It's about finding your path. It's about this female werewolf, and she doesn't really realize it. She only knows that she thinks her mother has a disability. But really, her mother's been drugged for a really long time to suppress the fact that she's a werewolf. And it's her coming into her own power. And it really, again, it's a male director, but the exploration of female power in this movie, it has a really sexy sex scene, which is amazing.
Nice.
And it's just so much fun. The werewolf design is great. And like, not to spoil it too much, but it has a happy ending in a way that I didn't expect it to. It's very arty. So I was like, something sad's going to happen. This is going to be bad. But it's just like a feel good movie, which you would not expect from a Danish horror art house movie, but it really is feel good. And I've watched it so much. I loved it so much that the first time I watched it, I immediately rewatched it.
Ooh, that's a big, like.
That's actually, I would take that suggestion. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to watch that movie. Okay.
Right.
You got me.
April.
She's in.
I decided to change mine because I had one that wasn't related to monsters, and I was like, fuck
it,
I gotta
figure
this out.
Yeah.
I felt like I was just like, the wind's changing as we were kind of finishing up, and I was just like, what am I gonna do? So I'm just gonna do I Walked with a Zombie.
Oh.
Ooh. See, these are a good trio.
Throwing it.
All right, so I was just like, okay, should I do like the original like James Whale like fucking Frankenstein movies, which are still kind of like high caliber, mm-hmm. some of the most beautifully shot films. Jacques Tourneur's I Walk with a Zombie. I'm going to go with that. A woman who's kind of like possessed and roaming around and in these, bluffs. You know,
yeah.
And there's just like lots of like drumming and intensity.
Love a good bluff walk.
Yeah. I love women wandering in a bluff.
I love like that being in your wheelhouse. You're like, I love monster movies, love vampire stuff, and a good bluff wander.
Yep. Yes,
give me it.
Tick tick tick.
No. It's one of those things where like it's I'm so into gothic shit, and this is definitely in that kind of gothic category. And I've been on like a tirade of making people watch more gothic things lately because it's hard to sell them because it's like, oh, it's not quite horror enough. And you're like, well, you know, fuck it.
Come
Gothic
on.
Is its own genre too, you know?
But it's the same aesthetic, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's the darkness, you know? If I feel like horror is, they can be the gateway drug for each other.
Mm. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, because I fell in love with some gothic shit and got real deep into horror. So
the first taste was free.
Yeah.
You just kept going back.
Yeah, I just kept.
Then all of a sudden, your entire wardrobe's black, and you're like, what do I do
and
here?
You find yourself in a bluff.
Yeah.
So next week, we'll be talking about Us on the show, and we'll have Alonzo back with us and Ricky too. So you know, stay tuned for this follow up to Jordan Peele's Get Out. I mean, we're gonna have so many things to say. We've got some reviews this week. We've got one from Grovert D. Slar. Grovert D. Slar?
Yep.
That's all right. It says, thank you for this podcast. 6-year-old white male, marginally woke, 4 years of my childhood in in Mexico, child of an archaeologist and an English lit major. God, you sound like a character in a cool horror film.
No kidding.
Like, this is great. Okay. The world needs your discussion of culture, sexuality, and social mores. Thanks for honestly discussing films and movies. Thank you so much. We love you, 60-year-old white male, marginally woke.
And watch your back. You might be stabbed any minute now.
Oh, no, God. Da, da, da. We're not coming for you with the pitchforks. That's just way back.
We're going back in time for that one.
I'll do the next is a little perfect nugget of a review from CMDM, podcast about movies, smart, insightful, and sometimes funny.
Emphasis on that sometimes.
Yes, all right. That's fair. You know what? They don't always land. That's how life is.
It's part of the gig. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Drea, so much for joining us today.
Always.
And thank you, Mallory. I'm so excited about your book. Again, that's called The Lady from the Black Lagoon. And you've got a screening that you're doing on Saturday. So if you're in LA, please check it out. Is there a website too?
If you go on MalloryO'Mara.com, Mallory O'Mara on Twitter, I'm posting all about it. Or you just go Google Rooftop Cinema Club Hollywood, you'll find it.
Yeah. And also listen to Reading Glasses, the podcast that Mallory co-hosts with Bria Grant. Fantastic if you're into books, and also if you're not into books and maybe you just want to get into books. So if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at Who Shot Ya Pod, or our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast. Or you can send us an email at whoshotya@maximumfun.org. The Who Shot line, if you want to call and leave a message under a minute, please, is WSY8031664. Again, that's WSY8031664. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.